Okay, let's unpack this. We are taking a deep dive into how culture really shapes one of the most fundamental parts of how we interact nonverbal communications, often invisible, right?
That's right. Yeah, we've got this really interesting source material here, particularly one document that just lays it all out, how incredibly different nonverbal cues can be, depending on the culture.
So our mission today is really to zero in on the key insights. What are some of the most maybe surprising ways culture changes the nonverbal rules? And maybe more importantly, why does understanding this actually help us connect better with people?
Well, nonverbal cues are sort of like culture's background language. They operate mostly below our conscious awareness, learned really young. So understanding them isn't just about facts. It's about recognizing this whole other language that influences trust, respect, perception, things we don't often stop and think about. It's a bit of a journey into those subtle codes.
Okay, so let's start right there. The sources really stress that culture isn't just like a backdrop, it's learned, it's like internalized software. How does that process directly shape how we communicate without words?
Well, the sources make it pretty clear. As we grow up, our culture basically installs its own specific set of attitudes, beliefs, values, and crucially expected behaviors.
Right, these become the norms we just follow, often without thinking.
Exactly. And we're talking practical things, how close you stand, when touch is okay, what a polite smile even looks like. It varies.
And because different cultures have installed, different software packages, people just aren't going to use or read nonverbal cues the same way you might.
That's it. That's precisely why misunderstandings aren't just like occasional glitches. They're almost baked into cross-cultural interactions if you're not aware.
You end up interpreting someone's actions based on your rules.
While they're acting completely normally according to theirs.
Yes.
That seems to be the core challenge. So navigating situations smoothly, avoiding what the sources call faux pas, it really means tuning into these different nonverbal norms.
You got it. It requires a certain level of awareness and calibration.
And the sources bring up a major hurdle here: ethnocentrism.
Ah, yes. Ethnocentrism, basically thinking your way, your culture's way, is the default, the standard.
The center of the universe, kind of?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And that other ways are, incorrect or maybe even inferior.
And the sources actually link this feeling to things like patriotism and pride, saying they can sometimes amplify that sense of cultural superiority.
And the results, well, the sources highlight, they're generally negative. It can lead to fear, dislike, even outright hatred of cultural outsiders. It really acts as a barrier,
A barrier to understanding.
a fundamental one, yeah.
So the way forward, according to this material, it isn't about ranking cultures, is it? It's more about seeing these differences as just different, not better or worse.
Precisely. The crucial insight is understanding how the meaning shifts. It's about knowledge, adaptation, not judgment.
And this isn't just about awkward moments. The sources stress that getting these cues wrong can lead to really significant disagreements. Personal disputes, sure, but potentially even conflict between nations.
It really shows how much of our sense of trust, maybe even safety, is tied to subconsciously reading these signals correctly based on our own cultural programming.
Okay, let's get into some specifics from the sources, because this is where it gets really fascinating. Starting with appearance, the material says flat out, there's no universal standard for attractiveness.
Absolutely not. What's considered beautiful or desirable, it's totally defined by a culture's values.
Right, like the examples they give, neck stretching, lip plates, teeth filing, things that might seem, well, extreme in one context are standards of beauty elsewhere.
Or even things common in Western cultures now, liposuction, breast implants, Botox. Those are also culturally defined ideals of beauty or achieving it.
So the point isn't that you need to adopt those norms.
No, not at all.
But just recognizing that these different standards exist is a form of respect, appreciating that beauty really is in the eye of the, well, culturally conditioned beholder.
Exactly. Respecting the difference, that's key.
Okay, moving beyond looks, gestures and movement. This feels like an area ripe for misunderstandings.
Oh, definitely. Cultures have vastly different ways of using gestures, movements, and they carry completely different meanings.
The greeting examples are pretty stark. In the US, you might expect eye contact, a handshake, maybe a hug, a smile, a nod.
But then you look at Japan often, a bow, maybe a handshake too, but eyes lowered, palms flat against the thighs, very different posture.
For South Americans, a handshake, yeah, but maybe also hearty pats on the back.
And it gets even more specific. The Maori in New Zealand traditionally rub noses.
Wow.
And some East African cultures spitting at someone's feet is actually a sign of respect. which is, you know, the complete opposite meaning for many others.
That's incredible. And religious context too, right? Like in Muslim culture, hugging is often same-sex for greetings.
Yes, and in Saudi Arabia, the strict rule about only using the right hand for eating. These are deeply embedded nonverbal rituals.
Just saying hello involves such different physical languages. What about saying goodbye or pointing? The sources mention the U.S. goodbye wave.
Right, hand up, palm out, maybe waggling. But then it points out that for Italians and Greeks, a similar motion, palm up, fingers curling back and forth, that means come here.
The opposite.
Exactly the opposite of what it might look like to someone from, say, the U.S. or Japan, where their come here gestures are different again.
So even basic signals are culturally coded. The sources also mention insulting hand gestures very wildly. That sounds like a minefield.
A total minefield.
Yeah.
An innocent gesture here could be deeply offensive somewhere else.
Okay, and head nodding. This one really surprised me. U.S. up and down means yes, agreement, simple.
Seems simple, right?
Yep.
But the sources say in large parts of Eastern Europe, Asia, Africa, that same up and down nod often means disagreement. No.
Seriously, the exact opposite.
The exact opposite.
Yeah.
And then in Japan, that nod might just mean I'm listening respectfully, not necessarily I agree.
Okay, wait. So listening, not agreeing.
Right. And then in Korea, shaking the head side to side apparently means I don't know, which in the U.S. we usually do with a shoulder shrug, right?
No. So one head movement. Yes, no, I'm listening, or I don't know, depending entirely on where you are. That really shows how deep this goes.
It really does. You absolutely cannot assume universal meaning.
Okay, faces and eyes. The sources say basic emotions, happiness, sadness. The facial expressions are kind of similar across cultures.
Broadly, yes. But the display rules differ hugely.
Display rules.
Yeah, like how much emotion you show, how intensely, for how long.
Yeah.
That's all culturally regulated.
Ah, okay. And eye contact is a big part of that. U.S. culture often values direct eye contact, honesty, confidence. The sources even mention specific timings, like how long you hold it.
But then contrast that with Japan, where holding eye contact for too long can be seen as disrespectful, especially with superiors.
Mm-hmm.
And in many Latino, Caribbean, and Asian cultures, avoiding direct eye contact can actually be a sign of respect, particularly towards elders or authority figures.
So what one culture reads as maybe evasive or uninterested,
another sees as polite and appropriate deference.
Yeah.
The sources mention Japanese and Nigerians, for example, not making constant eye contact is just natural for them. It doesn't mean they aren't paying attention.
And the amount of facial expression itself varies.
Oh, yeah. The sources point out that in the U.S., people, both men and women, are generally encouraged to be pretty expressive facially.
Whereas in Japan, the cultural norm is often to mask or control emotional displays more, to maintain composure.
And here's a really interesting nuance the sources mention. In many Asian cultures, a smile isn't always just happiness or friendliness.
Right. What else can it mean?
Well, it can signal sadness, confusion, disagreement, embarrassment, gratitude, frustration.
Yeah.
A whole range. Sometimes it's more about social etiquette, maintaining harmony, than showing exactly how you feel inside at that moment.
So you really can't just take a smile at face value across cultures.
No, it adds a significant layer of complexity to reading facial cues. Definitely.
Okay, shifting gears a bit. Touch. The sources actually categorize cultures based on touch.
They do. Broadly speaking, they talk about contact cultures. Think African Americans, European Americans, Latin Americans, Southern Europeans, Middle Easterners.
Mm-hmm.
People tend to touch more during conversation.
Okay, and the opposite.
Non-contact cultures. Places like Japan, Korea, Northern Europe. And also within Muslim cultures, there are specific rules about touch, especially between sexes. Physical touch during interaction is just less frequent or expected.
Understanding that basic difference seems pretty important for just, well, personal space and comfort.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Avoids making people uncomfortable or misinterpreting distance.
What about sounds? Vocalics and silence. In the U.S., we tend to value talk, right? Silence can feel awkward.
Yeah, very much so. Being quiet might be seen negatively, like you're not listening or you don't get it or you're just thinking about yourself.
But the sources contrast this with Japan, where silence is often viewed positively. There's respect for quiet contemplation.
And in Arabic culture, the source suggests that speaking louder can indicate strength, sincerity. Whereas softer speech might actually sound maybe aggressive or suspicious.
Interesting.
And dropping your pitch at the end of a phrase can be a way to signal you're looking for feedback. Subtle cues, but important.
And then there's space. Proxemics, how close you stand. This feels like a classic source of cross-cultural awkwardness.
It really is. The sources highlight cultures like Greeks, Arabs, South Americans, Southern Europeans, Middle Easterners. They generally stand much closer when talking.
Then, say, North Americans, Northern Europeans, East Asians.
Exactly. And the potential for misinterpretation is huge. Someone used to more distance might feel crowded, pushed, even aggressive.
While a person from the closer culture might see the other person as cold, aloof, uninterested maybe.
Precisely. Both are just doing what feels normal in their culture, but the nonverbal message gets totally scrambled in translation.
Okay, finally, let's touch on time. Chronemics. U.S. culture puts a high value on punctuality, right? Doing one thing at a time.
Very much so. While the sources point out that in many Latin American and Arab cultures, there's generally more flexibility, more comfort with being late, time is perceived differently.
And that's where you get the clash. Someone from a punctual culture might see lateness as disrespectful, inefficient, maybe even selfish.
While the person from the more flexible time culture, as the sources suggest for Latin America, might prioritize the relationship or finishing the current conversation over sticking rigidly to the clock, it's just a different value system around time.
It really drives home how even our relationship with time acts as a nonverbal signal shaped by culture.
It really does. It's fundamental.
So, wow. We've covered appearance, gestures, eyes, touch, voice, silence, space, time. It's actually incredible how pervasive these cultural differences are in nonverbal communication, deeply ingrained.
It really underscores that point from the sources. These aren't just minor quirks. They're fundamental cultural languages, often operating unconsciously, that profoundly shape how we see each other, how we interact.
And understanding even just a bit about these differences, like the sources suggest, isn't just, you know, academic trivia. It can make a huge difference in real life.
Absolutely.
Traveling, working with international teams, just living in diverse communities. It can shift you from potential misunderstanding towards hopefully better connection.
It really empowers you, doesn't it? To look beyond your own default settings and appreciate the complexity out there. It's kind of the antidote to that ethnocentrism we talked about.
So thinking about how deep this runs, how much of it is learned implicitly, unconsciously, it really leaves you with a question, doesn't it? How aware are you really of the nonverbal messages you're constantly sending based on your cultural programming? And maybe more importantly, how many signals might you be misreading or missing entirely from people with different backgrounds every single day? Something to definitely mull over.